Welcome to episode 301 of In Touch with iOS, the show that talks about iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and related technologies. I'm your host, Dave Ginsberg, and I have Marty Gentius back on the show, your second time, and I really appreciate you being here, especially if you're in an undisclosed location in a hotel room. How are you doing, Marty?
Oh, I'll disclose it. I'm down in New Orleans at a conference, and I came down here early because I had a board meeting, and now the conference is kicking in, and I'm enjoying it, but apparently the band decided to start playing under my window. So I don't think you can, you tell me you can't hear it, but I'm going to be on and off with the mic.
No problem.
I really am glad to be back with this group.
No, I'm really thrilled you're here. Regardless, we know you took your time out from your long week at the conference and come to see us. We appreciate it.
I needed this.
Yeah, all right, good.
Actually, I needed this.
Also here is Ben Rathick. Great to see you. I'm glad you were able to make it this week. How you doing?
I'm good. And I wish there was a band playing right below me.
Yes, we do that sometimes. Last but certainly not least, Jeff Gamet is here. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing all right. And Marty, I'm surprised you didn't learn your lesson last week. Kidding. And I absolutely love New Orleans. My parents used to live down there, and so I'd go down and visit them, and it was always a wonderful time.
Yeah, I do enjoy it here. I try to stay off main drag and I found a little cafe that plays traditional blues, a good meal, and you know, it's one of those bands where they call one guy and the guy calls four other people. And they show up and they know how to play everything together, even though, you know, they're not a steady band. It's great.
Those are the best places to find.
Yes. Yeah. In that case, the thrill isn't gone.
I got through that one, Ben. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about, we got some beta discussion, all kinds of news this week. Notably, we got the beeper sale and, When is all these other things? And I got a couple, actually a couple of Apple Vision Pro stories that'll be up right up Marty's alley. You can get his thoughts on it and all kinds of other fun stuff here, but let's go ahead and jump into the topics. Beta iOS 17.5 beta one is continuing. They did right after the show last week, they released the public beta of it. And it's good to see that, it's back. It was about a 4 week hiatus before that happened. So focusing on some outward facing features, especially stuff for the European Union and app developers in the EU are able to add their iPhone apps to their website. So users can download them directly without having to go to the app store. And so, yeah, we know all that stuff. So I don't know if you've noticed anything different since we talked last week, Ben, on that. In fact, I have a beta device now. I have an iPhone 13 I'm going to be using as beta going forward. So I'm kind of excited about that. So I installed it on that. So
I really haven't noticed anything new since last week. It's been pretty solid. It's one of those betas where I kind of think either most of it's EU related or it's for unannounced products.
Yeah. So that's for sure. I don't think any of you guys are on beta for iPhone or iPad. So, but a couple other notable things that were in here. Or are you, Marty? I don't think you are.
Yeah, I'm on beta. I'm actually on developer beta. I'm the idiot who just wants to try it. And I think they should start just naming their releases like 17.5 EU and then 17.6 EU because it looks like a lot of the corrections have been because.
Yeah, I think we've lost Marty, but we'll get back with him. The other thing is that they're anticipating when is 17.5 going to be released. We're only on beta one. So, I mean, we've got, 2 months until WWDC. So I'm sure Apple's going to take time with, especially with the EU stuff. Hard to say when it's going to be. Last year, this time, iOS 16.5 was released in around May timeframe. So we may go for a few betas here before they decide to make any changes and other bugs that they find. So. But it's definitely going to be interesting. Also found was an iPad OS 17.5 is confirming that the new display technology for the next gen iPad Pro, which we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, that I think it's going to be released sometime in mid-May. That's holding back a little bit. So it did find some of the firmwares of four new iPad models. It was the iPad 6, 3, 4, 5, 6. So, and also we talked about, it looks like a new pencil is on the way. So you got still have some speculation when it comes to that kind of stuff. Apple did also add in the 17.5 a new Quartiles word game for Apple News Plus subscribers. And it's a kind of a fun new addition, like a daily word game. I don't know if it's like a Wordle, but it's probably a little different. But I like to see that they're kind of making some changes and updates when it comes to that. So it definitely is going to be interesting to see where that goes. But that's pretty much about beta, unless you guys had anything else that relates to that. I will go ahead and move on. This was an interesting story. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Apple, please release the word game as its own app.
And there's that. But because it's News Plus, they may not.
Have you played that app yet? Has anybody played or tried that app? It's kind of fun. And I'm not a Wordle guy, but it's kind of fun.
So you did try it. Okay. Did you try it, Ben, or no?
Yeah. Oh, Ben, did you try it?
Not yet. I don't have access to an iPad here. I'd kind of prefer to do it on the iPad rather than the iPhone. I'll definitely check that once I have a chance to check it on. Yeah.
Let me know what you think. I don't have a News Plus subscription, so I guess I'll just be old school and play Wordle.
There you go. So let's move on. This was an interesting story this week, and I thought it'd be a good topic to discuss. The Beeper app. You remember the one that created that workaround for iMessage on the Android? Was acquired by WordPress owner Automattic. And Automattic, the company behind the popular web management system WordPress, has purchased Beeper and will absorb Beeper's 27 employees. Of course, we know Beeper made headlines back in December of 2023 for Beeper Mini, an app that brought iMessage to Android devices. Beeper Mini used reverse-engineered iMessage protocols and encryption to take advantage of Apple's own iMessage servers, to let Android users send quote-unquote blue bubbles texts to iPhone users without an Apple ID. And the app was supported by iMessage's functionality, including read receipts, type indicators, reactions, and then encryption. Apple, as we know, was not very happy about this, and they ended up blocking it at this point. So Automattic does not plan to revive Beeper Mini, but instead is taking on Beeper a universal chat app, which will be available on Android, iOS, and desktop devices. And Beeper is able to integrate with multiple chat networks with a universal inbox, though it does not currently work with iMessage. So there's a post about the acquisition. Beeper's CEO said that Beeper is cautiously optimistic about the future because the DOJ has sued Apple for blocking Beeper's Mini's access to iMessage. So he will serve as Automattic's head of messaging, and Beeper will operate as an independent team. So that's interesting to see. Jeff, what do you think about this sudden change to now being owned by Automattic, really WordPress?
It doesn't surprise me at all. Also, I'm going to be pedantic for just a moment because someone will end up calling you out on it, so we'll just stop it from happening. Automattic doesn't own WordPress. Automattic licenses WordPress, mm-hmm. and then sells WordPress hosting, but they don't actually own WordPress. It's confusing, and the fact that Matt Mullenweg is the boss of both does make it very confusing. So anyhow, saved you from the emails. Anyhow, here's the thing.
Thank you.
My guess is that what Automattic is going for here is the talent pool that they need to bring in. They own another messaging platform as well. Mm-hmm. And they've also bought like WooCommerce. And so there's all these things that are falling under the WordPress the Automattic umbrella. And I think what they're really going for is to build up a full business suite of resources. And if you look at what Salesforce has done over the years, like Salesforce owns Slack, this is the same kind of acquisition.
Ah, that makes total sense. How about you, Marty? What do you think on this?
I don't have too many thoughts on it. I was wondering if they were just trying to edge in on the new revised iMessage before it came out with the new operating system. If this was that, just them trying to get ahead of the game. I didn't think as deep with it in terms of Jeff thinking this is the beginning of a whole new suite of apps for that platform. I think that's a real cool idea, Jeff, but I just saw it as a simple, let's get ours out and get some attention before Apple comes out and tries to do the same thing.
Which, I mean, that's possible. And hindsight will let us know what they're really doing with it.
Right.
My gut instincts tell me that they really don't care about doing an iMessage specific integration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I think they're kind of going down the super app road too here.
Yep, definitely makes sense. A couple of things I wanted to talk as far as topics here. When do we expect a new Apple TV will be launched? It's been quite a while. It's been nearly a year and a half since the current Apple TV was released. So it's becoming due for a hardware upgrade. And there's been some rumors. So the launch timing was around January 2023 when it was reported that it was going to be released in the first half of 2024. If that time frame remains accurate, the Apple TV would be released by the end of June. Maybe they'll announce something at WWDC, hard to say. So what are they going to do with this? Well, right now we currently have announcement dates. The last one was the third gen, which we have now of the 4K, which was October 2022. So it's been a little while. So it's bound to get a faster chip. Will it get lower price? I kind of wonder. You know, they're always speculating all that stuff. And will they have an Apple TV with a camera? That could be interesting, since Amazon seems to be doing a lot of that lately with their Alexa devices. So what do you think, Ben? Where is the Apple TV going? I think it's overdue. I mean, I really love the Apple TV. I mean, especially since it's all the... We're not going to talk about Roku this week, but we did talk about it pretty extensively on Mac Voices Live.
My fist of Roku.
Yeah, about their advertising.
Here's the thing on that. It depends on where they want to go with the Apple TV.
Yep.
Because the current Apple TV is overpowered for everything except gaming. I mean, my A8 powered fourth generation Apple TV HD is still, after all these years, perfectly fine for running media apps. You can get into, you know, video conferencing, which the last two generations have been able to run that perfectly fine. About the only thing you would need that that more modern processor for is if you wanted to turn it into a true gaming experience. I mean, other than that, it's less expensive than the previous Apple TV 4K, and it's a lot more credible. They could let this sit for a few years like they've done before.
That's true. I mean, Marty, I'm assuming you've got your collection of Apple TVs like we do.
I've got Apple TVs. I can't, for most consumers, the current Apple TV does what it does. I don't think this will be, for most consumers, it's like, okay, this is the next level. I got to get to it. Unless there are some things that are integrated. I like the idea of the camera being in there. I think it's maybe more than just having a FaceTime-like communication with folks or being able to do that. There is a potential, I think, for using it with Vision Pro and integrating some of that information with people in the room, integrating the room in terms of if you want to create a spatial environment. There could be some really cool things, but I don't think building out Vision Pro right now into other products is a big priority, although it would attract me already having a Vision Pro more so than having a a camera in it to do FaceTime stuff with family who don't own Apple. You know, my immediate family does, but relatives and other family mm-hmm. don't necessarily own Apple products and want to FaceTime that way. So I it depends on where it goes.
Yeah. How about you, Jeff?
I feel like Ben and Marty have been reading my mind. So my first thought is, why does Apple need to refresh Apple TV? Even if it's been 2 years, what is it that they're going to do to the device that makes it a compelling refresh? And that's when Apple can say this, and this, whatever those things are, then they will roll out a refresh. Like Ben said, it's already overpowered for what it's being used for. Even the HD model is overpowered for what we're doing with it. So when Apple figures out what they want to do with it, that will enhance it in a new way. And Ben, you hit on the thing I was thinking, more power so that it can be used as an actual gaming console. The camera part, I'm feeling like an accessory is what that would be, because if you build it right into the device, into the Apple TV itself, you've now restricted where people can put it in their home mm-hmm. entertainment setups. And Apple already has everything in place to have a wireless camera accessory for this, because they're already doing it with your iPhone.
Just stick like an S5 or an S9 in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you buy your add-on camera for it for $49 or whatever, and then it just sits on top of your television.
Ben, I can see the advantage with gaming, but I've always felt, and I'm not a gamer, so that's why I'm asking Ben, is this really being seen by the gaming community as a potential gaming device, or are they so down the road in other paths that they've already ruled it out?
It's, let me put it this way. It's got the power to do gaming. I mean, it's way more powerful than a Switch, even the last couple of generations. But let me put it this way. Apple's hardware and software engineers and the people running the App Store are not on the same page.
That's so Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, not even remotely on the same page, because they put everything exists in Apple products, including the Apple TV, for them to be a great mainstream experience for gaming. But yeah. The App Store is like, you should just be coming to us since we're Apple.
But I'm speaking from the gamer's
yeah.
perspective. Will a gamer ever turn around that attitude that Apple's not a gaming device?
Apple will have to prove it. So far, they haven't.
Yeah.
Makes sense. All right. Got a couple topics here relates to the Vision Pro. And we've got our resident person who owns one, so we can get a good direct perspective of this. First thing is the Apple did release Vision Pro, Vision OS 1.1.2, did some bug fixes, and then they did revise the Vision OS 1.2 beta. This was released earlier this week. So we record, it came alongside both, as I mentioned, from after it launched 1.1. I don't know, I'm assuming you've got the beta on your Vision Pro, Marty. Have you tried this?
And I got beta, First, I love being described as the expert in Vision Pro because I own one.
Why not? Because you're the only one of the four of us that has it. So all I did was do the demo. Yeah, so
but I know this show was coming up, and they announced it by the time I was already in New Orleans. So I'm in the hotel, lousy Wi-Fi, and I tried like three or four times and finally got the 1.2 to upgrade this morning. And there's no significant changes in it that I can tell, but it's good to see that they're turning this stuff around pretty quickly on the Vision Pro in terms of upgrading. Everybody, the mantra is just wait till we get 2.0. Just wait till we get 2.0. And if that doesn't come out, or some inkling of that doesn't come out at WWDC, I think you'll have some disappointed developers, but you'll certainly have some folks who own headsets that'll be disappointed with it.
Yeah. Guys, I want to add any thoughts to that?
No,
I think the pro covered it.
Yeah. Yeah, no notes.
This was interesting. It's being I work in business, Apple did highlight some enterprise use cases for the Apple Vision Pro, such as customizable workspaces, collaboration on 3D designs, delivering specialized employee training, and guiding a remote field work. Apple explained how Vision Pro can enhance business productivity, featuring integration with widely used applications like SAP Analytics Cloud, Microsoft 365, in a spatial computing context. A good example they gave is SAP and Analytics Cloud on the Vision Pro can allow users to interact with their data in three-dimensional space, offering insights that were previously unattainable in a flat two-dimensional interface. Similarly, Microsoft 365 apps have been optimized for the headset to provide users a unique distraction-free workspace that leverages infinite canvases of spatial computing and multitasking collaboration. And they're also looking at the training and simulation areas represent another area where Vision Pro can make a substantial impact by enabling realistic, immersive training experiences. Companies like KLM, Royal Dutch Airlines, can improve technical maintenance and operations without the need of costly physical prototypes or taking equipment offline for training purposes. Engine shop apps, for instance, the KLM technicians can train on engine models in full fidelity with their own space without having to have all these things they had to do. So this kind of excites me to see that there is a potential future for this. I don't know if it's there just yet. Again, Marty, I'll throw it at you again with this stuff, with what you're using it as for your personal use, but what do you think on all this? I think this is something exciting in the business world.
Yeah, this is what I'm really interested in, because I'm trying to move it from just an entertainment device into a device that can be used for productivity. And from a business standpoint, I'm excited about the potential. I tried to look at both of these apps. I wasn't able to get into the engine shop app, or it wasn't searchable that I could get it. But there is another app that is more of a demo app, and it will explode and like jet engines into parts. The whole thing is to demo that and then show you ways in which the company can charge you a lot of money to do that with your model that then you can use for sales purposes. That is pretty cool. There is, of course, the Mars rover, where you can make the rover as big or as small as you want. You touch on certain aspects of it. You get some information about it. So again, from a sales training maybe standpoint, that's possible. And there is also the race engine, the Porsche race engine, that you can put in your living room and walk around. But yeah, I think it's just a step away from that becoming more of a commercial room. Yeah. And in terms of having a meeting space, there's a really cool app that I've been using called InSpace, which is InSpace. And it creates your own room, and you can invite people in. You sit in a circle on fluffy pillows or whatever, and the conversation is very real with the personas, and it's a very cool experience. So I think it has business applications, and we're starting to see some of it.
Yeah. Did you happen to try Microsoft 365 at all? Or
nothing noticeable that I could tell that makes it any different than using it on a flat screen.
Okay.
You know, of course, doing the integrated shared space with other people coming in, one of you guys are going to need to buy a headset so I can have a friend and we can try that out together.
Yeah. He's pointing out, Ben. Thoughts on this, Jeff?
I think it's great. Apple put the videos out. They need to do a lot more of these. And I feel the reason they need to do this is because this is a brand new platform. It's not being pushed as just another AR/VR headset. So to get companies to understand how they can effectively use this in their businesses, Apple needs to spoon feed the information to them. And a video like this is a great part of that. So keep making these. Show this being used in a lot of different business environments. And honestly, they need to do a whole thing on using the Omni apps, because everything that they have has, I believe everything has been updated for Vision Pro, and showing a whole demo of project management with all that stuff just up in front of you. That would be very compelling.
Yeah, I think so. How about you, Ben? What do you think?
Yeah, I have two. I have two of the Omni apps running now through Vision Pro, and I'm still holding out for that. Those kind of Adobe granular, even Final Cut to appear and use the full dimensionality of the spatial video, environment, computing environment. But because that's where I'm doing more audio and I'm doing more video editing than I'm doing project management. But I've got both of those apps in there, and it works pretty cool. Sorry, Ben, you're up.
Go ahead, Ben.
I think at this point, Apple should really be going in all in on business. So far, I mean, either Apple has shown very little desire to be in the traditional VR, AR space. You don't see the games. You don't see the fitness apps on Vision Pro, at least not yet. Right now, you have basically two use cases. Number one, as basically a content creation, or not a content consumption demo, which, let's be perfectly honest, when you're looking at $3,500, there's not a whole lot of more users that are willing to spend that for basically to get just that experience. So if you want to move it forward right now, you have to show what this can do in business, how this can save businesses money, and try to get a stranglehold on the market before the competition sees spatial computing as something viable.
Sure. So, all right, let's go on next topic. Oh, no, one more thing about the Vision Pro. Apple Vision Pro owners are complaining of headaches, neck issues, and black eyes. Some Apple Vision Pro owners have been dealing with the health issues related to the wearing of the headset. This has been a report from MarketWatch. The site spoke to Vision Pro owners experiencing headaches, neck pain, and among other issues. The marketing chief of Hopscotch Interactive said that she had two super dark black eyes after wearing the Vision Pro for the first time, likely caused by the weight on the cheeks. And Apple has declined to comment on any customer complaints about this related to this. What do you think, Marty? I didn't think this is something that's, gosh, could it happen? Maybe.
I genetically have two super dark black eyes all the time. So I see it as
convenient.
As an enhancement, as a fashion choice. I don't see it as detrimental. You know, I watched the wording of that. The group doing the survey asked people who had problems. Yeah. I mean, that's how it's written out. We asked people who had problems. So the article then becomes all about the problems that people had with Vision Pro. And following the comments on it from that article, there are folks that are screaming, well, Apple needs to fix this. Well, yeah, I mean, Apple's only response is basically, you need to look at how to appropriately put this thing on your head and how to wear it. Other complaints were, if you're having those kinds of issues, your light seal is wrong, you need to get that refitted. So there are solutions to these problems, but the folks, some folks, I'll acknowledge that, but I don't think necessarily putting it all on Apple and also looking at the way people are actually wearing the headset. I use the single loop for a long time, and then for some reason had an neck ache and maybe I had a tired day or something. And I switched to the double loop and I'm using that now, but that gets kind of clunky when I'm on an airplane. So flying down here, I went back to the single loop. So you kind of have to make choices about how you're going to set it up and how you're going to use it.
Okay. Yeah, when I did the demo, I just had the single loop, and it felt comfortable for me. But of course, I only had it on for what 20 to 30 minutes. So, but yeah, I could see. I mean, then some people may want that extra loop, as far as that goes, and so it's interesting to see where that goes. What do you think, Jeff?
When I did my Vision Pro demo, they were very explicit about saying, if you're feeling the weight on your cheeks, then we need to adjust this because it's not fit correctly. And so that's, I mean, that's the thing right there. I hate to toss out the Steve Jobs line, well, you're holding it wrong. But in this case, yeah, they probably kind of are. And as far as this study goes, I don't see anything wrong with collecting data from people who are having problems with a specific product, in this case, Vision Pro. That can be useful information. The problem I see is reporting on it as Vision Pro has all of these problems, and look at this study that backs it up. I think that's a misrepresentation of the data. Now, if the company is presenting the data in the same way, then that's a problem as well, and they're actually diluting the value of the data they're collecting.
I agree with that. What about you, Ben?
This is a brand new product that has only been on the market for a couple months. Yep. As much as Apple would like to test it, there are 7 billion different craniums on this planet. Not everybody's head... It's not going to play with everybody's skull the same way. Honestly, with it being kind of a public beta at this point, this is data that Apple needs to essentially develop further versions of the Vision Pro. Say that 3 times.
Yep.
so they can have it better fit, design. Essentially alloys and other materials around correct weight distribution. This is going to get better with time, but especially the first revision here, there probably are going to be people where, because of the way their skeletal and muscle structure is, it just isn't going to be comfortable for them. Apple can't come up with every contingency on 1.0.
Right. I mean, I guess I've said this all along. That's why I opted not to even consider buying at this point. I want to see where 2.0 goes and like to see what people are doing. Like you, Marty, it's great you were able to get it. And give us some, you know, ideas of what you're trying, and who knows? When the next version comes out, we might get excited about it, you know? So let's go ahead and move on. This was interesting to find out. Google Pixel 8's flagship AI photo editing feature is going to come to iPhones. This was announced today as we record. Google's next month will make its latest AI-powered photo editing feature available to all users of Google Photos on iOS. The company did announce this. Magic Editor, which is featured heavily in last year's Google Pixel 8 series marketing blitz, uses generative AI to perform complicated photo edits, such as filling in gaps in a photo, repositioning some subjects, and additional foreground background adjustments, like making a cloudy gray sky look blue. So endless possibilities with these editing tools. I actually have a Pixel 8 Pro, which I'm holding in my hand now, that I've been testing for a little bit here and haven't had a lot of time to spend with it, because of course I spend most of my time on an iPhone. But I'm pretty amazed with this thing, what this feature has to do when it comes to that. So what do you think, Jeff, on this? I think this is something that this could be something interesting, and it may even make Apple look closer when iOS 18 comes along here. You know,
I love competition because it keeps all the companies on their toes. So Google saying, hey, we're bringing this to iPhone, means that Apple better have been looking at this feature already. and have something that's going to be part of iOS 18. So this, in that sense, is a win for everyone. The other side of it is that I, since I don't use an Android phone and I don't use this, and since it also requires you to have a Google account, and I know that there, that you get like a certain amount for free every month where you can use this, and then you have to pay for other subscriptions. Does that mean that the images are being processed on Google servers as opposed to being processed locally on your phone? And I'm assuming that if Apple offers us a similar feature, the answer will be unequivocally, this is done on the phone. And then one more point, I do not think this is Google saying, hey, we just want to own more market. Well, they do want to own more market, but this is not an altruistic move. This is a very strategic business move so that Google can say, just like they do with other features, look, we're not locking people into the Android platform. You can use our tools on anything. And they're, so this is an optics thing at bottom line.
Agreed. Go ahead, Ben.
To take it one step further, it's not just an optics thing. It's a sales pitch. The people who are going to have this in front of them already are predisposed to a certain degree to the Google ecosystem. They have that Google account. They probably have a Google One subscription. So what they're saying here is, you know, if you like this, well, maybe you'd like to see what else Pixel can offer. And let's be honest here. Pixels are very credible competition as far as feature sets. Are. Yeah, maybe not Google salesmanship, but they are pretty incredible phones. So
I could say it firsthand at comparing having the Pixel 4, 8 Pro. It's a pretty amazing phone, but I'm still partial to iPhone. So,
yeah. So to a degree, this is Google betting on themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a short affair with Google phones, and the short time that I had with them, I was impressed with the photography. I was impressed with the way the editing that you could do with the photos. I do have a Google One account, and that's just because the work that I do and the people I have to interface with, that's where a lot of stuff gets put. So I have that account, so I don't have to worry about my minimum number of erasers that I can use per month. But I'm a photographer by nature, so all this is good, but I'm having a hard time really thinking it's going to be useful for me. But I agree with you, Ben, on what you said about the Pixel phones.
All right. So that's definitely some good feedback on this, and I'm looking forward to see what happens with this, you know? Let's go ahead and move on. Now we can go on to talking about some spyware in the news here. We're moving on to the news this week. iPhone users in 92 countries have been receiving a spyware attack warning from Apple, but the company wouldn't divulge how it detected the incidents. Some iPhone users got very concerned and alerts to these devices Wednesday. Apple sent notifications to individuals in 92 countries warning them that they may be the target of the mercenary spyware attacks that this was reported, and that you're being targeted by this spyware attack that's going to try to remotely compromise your iPhone associated with your Apple ID, the message says. So this instance isn't hardly the first time Apple's had to send this sort of notification. It happened since 2021. Over 150 countries have received similar messages with this. And what do you think, Ben, on this?
This won't be the last time this happens.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, from a political standpoint, not all countries share our viewpoint on privacy.
Right.
To the point where some of the state actors or those that they employ think their citizens do not have a right to privacy. And privacy, since privacy is part of Apple's ethos, mm-hmm. they it's in their best interest to send out these warnings rather than, let's be honest, if they knew this was happening and it came out, that'd be the Apple scandal to end all scandals.
Yep. How about you, Monty? What do you think? Oh, am I the last party there?
I think he's frozen.
Yeah. Jeff,
just very intent.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, if Apple didn't send me a notice about it, I probably wouldn't. I'm sorry. Should I start?
Yes.
Go ahead, Marty. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all you.
Yeah. I don't have a lot to say about this. Other than if Apple didn't send that message out, I and probably a lot of other users would never think of it. So I see it as a public service to me more than a concern about security or security issues. I'm kind of feeling good they got my back.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Jeff.
I've seen a little bit of people complaining, saying that Apple should disclose how they figured this out and what exactly is involved. And I disagree with that. Apple should not disclose how they discovered what was going on, because then it tells everyone what the attack vector was. And once they have patched it, then it's okay to say this is what the exploit was, which the security notes, the extended security notes will include that. So
yeah.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, if they tell people basically what they're doing here, that gives the attackers an avenue to get their own fix on.
Yep. So just as always, be aware of any of these types of pop-ups, and don't give out your information. Don't click on links. Be vigilant about this stuff. But it's an unfortunate thing about these things these days that you need to be aware of stuff. So. The next story, and Ben, you brought this in here, and this is actually a news press release that Apple just released today as we record, that Apple is expanding its repair options with the support for used genuine parts. New parts calibration process will begin this fall, and activation lock to limit the use of parts from lost or stolen devices. Today, Apple announced that an upcoming enhancement to existing repair process that will enable customers and independent repair providers to utilize used Apple parts and repairs. Beginning with iPhone models in the fall, this new process is designed to maintain an iPhone's user's privacy, security, and safety while offering consumers more options, increased product longevity, and minimizing the environmental impact of a repair. Using genuine Apple parts will now benefit from the full functionality and security afforded by the original factory calibration, just like these new genuine parts here. And, you know, and they go on to give those examples. And I know, Ben, you brought this in. Tell us what you think about all this.
Okay. This is Apple reading the room when it comes to legislative priorities. Right to repair laws have already been passed. Similar laws would probably be passed in other states, maybe federally. So this is Apple getting ahead of it and turning this into a PR win rather than basically trying to drag down their image the way the DMA has.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this is a good direction Apple's going. This has always been a interesting issues when it comes to getting repairs. You know, I'll have firsthand experience just this past weekend. I have an extra iPhone 13 here. The screen's got some scratches on it, and I asked, "Okay, well, what it would cost?" I mean, there's scratches. They're not. It's cosmetic, but I mean, there's a deep enough scratch where you could feel it, but it's not enough that it's not affecting the functionality or having good view of the screen. So they basically told me, "No, we don't replace it because it's got cosmetic issues, not actual physical." Like if it was cracked, of course they would do it. But this iPhone also had another problem, is that I was having trouble hearing people when you used FaceTime. And it was very prominent that was the problem. So they ended up replacing the whole system board in here. And of course they wiped the phone without telling me too, as I should have known better, but they did it, but we were okay. So I got away with it because iCloud was backed up and everything. So But yeah, I think this, I noticed while I was in the Apple Store for quite a long time, so I ended up upgrading two phones. This was one of them that I kept, and then another one. The process is definitely a lot different than it was in the past. Even worse is when you're doing the upgrade, you got the stolen device protection. If that's enabled, you have to wait an hour before you turn off Find My. Like, that's what it's designed to do. But I need to get this done now. I can't wait. So I actually had to go on to a Mac and actually sign into the iCloud account to remove Find My at that point. So my point is the repairs are definitely, I can see Apple's changing the way they go about doing things here. So what's your thoughts on this, Marty, with the use of used parts?
Well, this? I've never used used parts. I like the idea that Apple seems to be giving a stair step sort of, if you want to, you know, people can get their phones repaired with unauthorized dealers. If you want to go up to the next step, go to an authorized dealer, or if you want to even try to do it yourself, do it yourself. But now the option of being able to have access to parts that you know with some degree is certified by Apple, even if they're used parts, that will not cause some of the problems that could befall you later on if you have a problem with the phone. For me, my question is, fixing your own phone, does that void any other type of repairs done by Apple under warranty? And I'll toss that out to the group, and you know, I think it's good. We've got some steps now built in. I like what Ben says about this is a proactive move in terms of dealing with right to repair. But I still wonder about what's the liability for the user if they do that repair themselves. And that's just maybe my lack of knowledge.
Before we get to that, go ahead, Jeff. Why don't you put in your comments on this?
Ben nailed it. Apple is proactively trying to avoid being legislated into the way they handle this. So, yeah, of course they're doing this now. As far as if you do use parts repairs on your phone yourself and something breaks, I'm betting that's not going to be covered by warranty.
Right.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, does anybody
this
have
is, any, yeah, this is a cav this is definitely a caveat emptor type of situation.
Yep, yeah.
Agreed.
I'll keep taking my devices to the Apple Store and have them fixed there.
Oh yeah. No, I still would do that too. And it was a good experience. Other than he probably should have reminded me that the phone was being wiped.
That would have been nice. Okay. Other side of that, and then I'll shut up on the topic.
No, I
mean, this is really great news for people that live in areas where getting to an Apple Store takes a long time or is a big pain in the butt. Now, authorized repair centers that might be much closer have more options for providing you with affordable fixes.
That's true. Anybody have comments? Go ahead. And Marty, you said that.
Just agreeing with Jeff. That sounds like a very cool option for folks who don't have ready access to Apple stores.
Right. All right. Anything else on that topic? I don't know if you wanted to answer. So, Marty, you threw that out there. Why don't you go ahead and review that again and see if anybody has any response on that?
Response on the right to repair or response on the warranty?
I think you said the right to repair.
The right to repair, yeah. So, yeah, it's just the idea that it's not a risk that I would take personally. No. Like Jeff, no. I'd like to get my work done by professionals. And I, you know, as much as I might fancy myself, and I don't, as some guy who can take apart a toaster, the toaster never gets put back together the right way. So, leave it to the people who've taken apart phones to do it for me, particularly certified and in store folks.
Right.
Yes. And as someone who has taken apart phones and perfectly capable of doing it, I would much prefer Apple do it because it's very stressful on these.
It is, especially it's an expensive device, you know, if you mess it up. So, all right, a couple more stories before we wrap up here. This Apple has a solution when it comes to this ghost touch issue that's been on a number of Apple Watch models. This article in Apple Insider, our friend Ed Drewery, good to see some articles from him. Apple had expanded its investigation into the ghost touch issue on the Apple Watch and is now acknowledging more models are affected by this bug. It's Apple Watch ghost touch is a serious issue, referring to an unintended touches and swipes on the screen that the device registers. Apple is not taking these reports lightly and has launched a thorough investigation to identify what the cause is and find a solution. So currently they don't really have a solution on this, but have any of you guys experienced this on the watch? I haven't really noticed it on my watch. But this is interesting to see that Apple
is not.
So I don't know if you had as well.
I have an Ultra. I have an Ultra 2. And there are times where I'm wondering, why did this screen come up? So maybe I'm experiencing it. Maybe I'm not. But it just seems to be a little more wonky than previous versions of Apple Watches for me. And it comes and goes. So it could be whether I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt that day and it does it, or I don't know. But it just seems a little bit more wonky. So I'm hoping some software update, some revision will fix that problem.
Yeah.
Well, Marty, now that you're saying this, what you just described, I think I am experiencing this problem. And I just didn't realize it because I do. Wow. Sometimes I'm really lame, just not picking up on what's going on. Typically at least once a day, I'll have one of my complications is just open where it took me to the app instead. And I have no recollection of touching the display to make it do anything. And I've just been thinking, oh, that's weird. Wow. Yeah. I'm slow.
Yeah, and for me, it always opens something that I would never open anyways. So it makes it even weirder. It's like, I can't figure out how it got to this place. So
yeah, very strange.
So, well, now I want a software update.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll do a few more stories here before we keep going here. Teens just love the iPhone and the Apple Watch, but they don't like Apple Music or Apple TV Plus. The iPhone continues to be an overwhelmingly popular with teens, according to Piper Sandler's biannual teen survey. 85% of U.S. teens surveyed own an iPhone, and 85% plan to purchase an iPhone as their next smartphone. While the iPhone is still the most popular smartphone among teens, ownership is down from the last survey, which was from 87% versus 88%. So it's not a huge jump down, but it's a Apple's dominance in the teen market is particularly of interest right now because it's one metric that the U.S. Department of Justice is targeting against its antitrust lawsuit against Apple we've talked about. It's because the DOJ does suggest that Apple's ownership of U.S. smartphone market causes social stigma, exclusion, and blame for non-iPhone users with the green bubbles.
Oh, please.
Please. And then as far as the Apple Watch, 34% of teens reported using the Apple Watch with no change in that since the last survey. But as far as music goes, teens seem to prefer Spotify as their music service. Nearly two-thirds of them were surveyed, and Spotify was their preferred service. Just over 30% of teens say that using Apple Music and Apple TV Plus is not popular among teen audiences. It might be just because of, maybe the content isn't interesting to the younger crowd here. So you had some comments, Jeff. I know.
Okay. The loving iPhone and Apple Watch is no surprise. Not being fans of Apple Music is no surprise. This has nothing to do with the content that's available on Apple Music because it's the same as what's available on Spotify. It's the fact that Apple has these very repetitive playlists. The radio stations, they can be repetitive as well. And then you have the whole thing with the way playlists work. Spotify offers features that are superior to what Apple is offering with Apple Music. So, Of course, that's where they're going to go for their music. As far as Apple TV Plus goes, as the catalog expands, I think we'll see more content that appeals to younger audiences. However, we don't have that today. I think it's I don't want to say more mature audiences, because look at us, but I think older audiences, and then kids, and that middle space, finding the shows that are going to be quality and attract that viewing audience, that takes a lot of work, and Apple just isn't there for that demographic yet, but I think it'll happen eventually.
What do you think, Ben?
No.
I think there's a reason for that. And it's basically because of the widely different viewing practices of Generation Z and Generation Alpha. Quite frankly, they prefer short form videos. The shorter the better. So it's not that Apple TV is bad. They just prefer things like TikTok and YouTube.
Yeah.
Good point. So is there a streaming service, not short form TikTok sort of thing, that this demographic has been drawn to? Does Netflix or Amazon or Disney have the right content for them? No?
No. Yeah.
All right. Well,
nope. I think late Gen X and millennial parents try to feed him the kind of stuff we would watch. But I mean, just watching my own niece and nephews, which are kind of in that below the elementary school demographic. Honestly, I rarely see them watch any long form content.
Oh, that's a good point. The kids in my life that are elementary school age, I never see them watching anything other than YouTube, pretty much.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. I find Spotify a much more engaging interface than I do Apple Music. So, and so my son is all about Spotify. He's not a teenager anymore. But he grew up in a sort of Spotify focused world, and I get it, because I have both a Spotify account and Apple Music account. When I'm playing things on my device, I'm always going to Apple Music. I'm not going to the Spotify app. When I'm playing things on my desktop or through my desktop, it's often Spotify. I think the other thing about content, both made great points around the content issues. You've got to find the artists that generation is interested in, and those are the people you put in the short form shows or even the long form shows, because they're attracted to artists that they connect with, on screen, or artists that they can relate to. And those artists aren't in the Apple TV product right now and content. So, probably they need to do more of that content in that, but for that group, but they also need to be sensitive to the fact that they're looking for, they should be engaging artists that they're attracted to.
True.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last top story is going to be about Apple Music. So speaking of Apple Music and Spotify, Apple Music is leading in the HomePod streaming, but Spotify has an incredibly strong position. Again, our friend Andrew Ward wrote this in Apple Insider. Apple Music emerges as the top choice for HomePod users, and with Spotify also very strong on the platform. Recent research from consumer intelligence research partners has shed light on the competitive music streaming hardware landscape, and it reveals that Amazon's in-house music services, Prime Music, Music Unlimited, are gaining significant traction. Popularity of Amazon Music, however, raises concerns about fair competition, as roughly one-third of the consumers uses Apple Prime Music. Meanwhile, 14% opt for Apple Music Unlimited, potentially impacting the market shares for rivals for Apple Music and Spotify, as well as Google's YouTube Music. Interesting, these figures are as twice as high as observed on platforms such as Google Home and the Apple HomePod. On the other hand, Spotify is leading the streaming music services, which sees higher usages on Google Home devices, 28%, and then Apple HomePod at 33%. Compared to the Amazon Echo, where it's only about 22%. So this isn't anything surprising about the where things are on the HomePod front. You know, Jeff, the lover of you are of HomePods, what do you think of this?
It's true. I have a very dysfunctional relationship with my HomePods. Yeah. I probably need therapy because of it. Anyhow, no, this doesn't surprise me at all. The integration that you get with the Yes Lady and your HomePods and Apple Music is a good experience for what this whole thing is. Seeing Spotify have a larger percentage on other platforms doesn't surprise me either. How many people do you know that actually listen to Google streaming music service stuff? Exactly. And even with Amazon Prime, I still forget that I can listen to music streaming through Amazon Prime. It's in that space. It's basically Spotify and Apple Music, and everyone else is just kind of there.
What do you think, Barney?
Yeah, just exactly what Jeff says. When I'm in my kitchen and I turn to a device to do music, I'm going to the Yes Lady. I'm going to a HomePod. On my device, my phone, I'm using the Yes Lady. When I'm on, as I said before, when I'm on my desktop, I'm probably going to Spotify just because of the interface for it. This doesn't surprise me at all. I get constant reminders from Amazon that, hey, by the way, we have a music service you could be tapping into, but I've got music set up on two different systems or two different platforms. I don't need a third. So
I hear you. And Ben, you got the final word on this before we wrap up.
I'm actually rather surprised that Spotify has 33% of the market as far as HomePods go. It hasn't been all that long that Spotify has basically had full featured access to the HomePod.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, that's a great show this week. Thank you all for being here this week. And we did hit on some great topics. And let's go ahead and wrap up for this. And that's a wrap for this week. Please send your comments, questions, and suggestions to our email address, which is feedback@intouchwithios.com. You can follow us on Mastodon at intouchwithios at techhangout.social. Support the show by buying me a coffee at intouchwithios.com/coffee. I would like to give a shout out to Steven. He bought me a number of coffees this week. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for supporting us. But you can do that too if you go there. Again, it's intouchwithios.com/coffee. We'd really appreciate it. You can become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/intouchwithios. We have two tiers available to support the show. We would really appreciate it. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe so you're notified when we are live streaming, which is on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on our YouTube channel. A shout out to Cletus and a number of others that were in the chat this tonight when we were doing live streaming here. And that's on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/intouchwithios, where you can watch the current and past live streams as well as listen to past shows. Visit In Touch with iOS Magazine on Flipboard, where many of the topics we discuss are flipped into that magazine. The link is in our show notes. You can subscribe to the show in your favorite podcatcher, including Pocket Casts, Overcast, Apple Podcasts with transcripts, and many others. But better yet, just go to our website at intouchwithios.com, where all the links to all the ways to listen to us is on our website. I am Dave Ginsburg, and you can find me on Mastodon at DaveG65 at mastodon.cloud. And Marty Gentius, thank you so much for coming to us from beautiful New Orleans in your hotel room. And where can people find you?
They can find me at Gentius, J-E-N-C-I-U-S, at mastodon.social. Also on the Tech Savvy Professor podcast, Circular Firing Squad podcast, and on Mac Voices on Tuesday nights. And yes, I love being here, so thanks for asking me. And hopefully next time I'll have a better stretch of internet, so I won't have so much lag.
At your home location. Thanks for being here, Marty. Ben Rathick, thank you for being here. Glad we were able to make it this week. Where can people find you? think you're muted.
Ben lost his voice.
Eric.
It's a miracle. I've gained it back.
It is a miracle.
You can find me at Ben Raythig on your social media of choice. On Tuesdays, you can find me on Mac Voices Live with future NAB attendee Chuck Joyner. On Thursday and Friday morning / afternoon / whatever time it is. God, I just turned into Chuck. You can find me on the Big and Mac shows on the British Tech Network. And of course, you can always find me here on In Touch with iOS with Dave Ginsberg.
Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate it. Last but certainly not least, Jeff Gamet, thank you as always for being here. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you?
I just love this, so thank you for including me.
Of course.
All right, so social media, Jay Gamet on everything, and I'm active on Mastodon, Instagram, and Threads. Then for shows, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays, here with you on In Touch with iOS on Thursdays. Then on the British Tech Network, The Big Show on Thursdays, The Mac Show on Fridays. And Brian Chaffin and I, we also do Context Machine.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for listening and watching and supporting the show. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back next week for another fun-filled edition of In Touch with iOS. And until then, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we'll talk again soon.